listening to the most original talk radio station anywhere. We are LA Talk Radio at latalkradio.com.
You're listening to State of the Art with Michael Sterling and Paul Strolley right here on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Michael Sterling.
Yes, you are, you sexy bastard.
Yes, I am.
I'm so pleased to be sitting opposite
well,
you
thank
again.
You, Paul.
You make my Monday, pal.
Well,
you do.
Thank you so much.
You
I was
really
just
do.
Sitting here admiring your hair, Paul.
I don't want to talk about my hair.
Why is that?
You know I'm touchy about it. So I don't, let's not start
All
there.
All right.
Let's not
I think
start
we've opened a can of worms.
With the hair. We'd like to thank our presenting sponsors, Breakdown Services. Breakdown Services is the entertainment industry standard used around the world, providing the most professional means to reach talent agents as well as actors when casting a project. To learn more about Breakdown Services, visit www.breakdownexpress.com.
Our thanks also goes out to performingartslive.com for their ongoing support of our live arts calendar. Performingartslive.com is the most comprehensive such listing service in Southern California, enabling you to search events by date, category, and region.
And today we are joined by two renowned actors who are portraying two of the most iconic personalities in this business we call show, one being the Oscar-winning yet troubled actress Vivian Leigh, and the other being a man often dubbed the world's greatest entertainer, Al Jolson. Both of the productions we'll discuss today are Los Angeles premieres, and we are delighted to be joined by the performers who breathe life into these mythical figures of stage and screen. With us in studio today, please welcome Judith Chapman and Mike Burstyn.
Oh,
nice. I'm doing it twice. I'm doing it twice.
Oh, yeah.
I'm sorry. Hang on 1 second.
Back! No biscuit!
I think
sorry.
You two are just having way too much fun. I was almost getting a little blushy with your intros to each other.
Oh, my.
It's the green tea. It's,
it is. How come you didn't call me a sexy bastard? I'll take the sexy. I don't know about the bastard.
Yeah, you know.
Michael and I just, we know one another far too well over the years, don't you
far
think?
Far too
so
well,
I take,
yeah.
Take too many liberties with how I mock Michael.
It's all in good fun.
It works.
And it makes us feel very comfortable.
Yeah,
oh, yes.
But, you know, look at the hair.
He's got gorgeous hair.
He's got gorgeous hair. Come on. We did a radio interview ourselves. We were a guest on another show last week. And what did our host, Sheena Metal, say?
It was Sheena Metal, who's also here at LA Talk Radio, who is... She's been on radio forever, and she has, what, a half a dozen shows now? I don't know.
Well, not that many, but three or four. Yeah.
But she's always on the air, and she was complimenting me on my hair, and she just said, you know, you have 70s heartthrob hair. And I just didn't really know how to take that because
it's a compliment.
I didn't know if but was it a compliment or was it like cut your hair because you look like David Cassidy?
Judith, for people who are not seeing this, the guy is bald.
Shut
what,
up!
What hair are we
Shut
talking
read
about?
Read the notes, Mike.
Oh,
read
I'm
the notes.
What hair?
I only hope that I have that much hair.
Read the flashcards.
Oh,
please.
I'm sorry. Yes, he has lovely hair. He really does.
This is why we are on the air. This is why we're going out to thousands of people to talk about my hair.
Well, you know, I mean,
and it's a good thing I have hair because if I was bald with this nose, I would be a cockatiel. I would just be like, I would just put a big cuddle bone next to me and I'd just like bob that, like one of those.
Now he's a cockatoo.
I'm going to forgo the obvious.
Yes, I wouldn't touch that with a 10-foot pole.
But very excited to have these two performers with us. And I'm very excited about we're going to start actually with Judith. But very quickly, just so I have it in my head, the Vivian is a one-person show.
Yes, it is.
And Jolson is primarily you, but you have backup singers and performers.
We have three performers that back up and a live band on stage.
And a live band. Right.
That I must say, by the video that I saw, is a cooking band.
They are, yes.
Yeah.
Well, actually, our musical director is coming from New York. Mm-hmm. The rest of the musicians will be local. And they'll be cooking, too.
Yeah.
Local LA cooking musicians.
Yeah, cooking fantastic. Locally.
Cooking locally.
Locally in North Hollywood.
Yeah.
All right, cool. Very excited about talking about it.
I have Noel Coward in my play.
You do?
Some of his music.
He's back? Wow.
It's got to be really awkward.
Oh, my God.
No band, but Noel Coward shows up.
Now, when you said you're going to start with Judas, what do you mean by that?
I'm going to start with Judas. We're going to talk to Judas.
Oh, you're going to talk?
Ladies first.
Oh,
yes.
You're going to talk to Judas.
Yes, exactly.
He said he was going to start with
Age
you.
Before beauty, Michael.
Oh, yes. Like. No.
Speak.
Beauty. Speak. No, beauty first.
Well, why don't we get right down to it?
Why
right?
don't you, Michael?
Why am I here?
Introduce the lovely lady.
Ladies and gentlemen, our first guest continues to enjoy a long career on stage and television. Her current role as the scheming Gloria Fisher Bardwell on The Young and the Restless marks her sixth major daytime drama. She has also appeared in many primetime series and feature films. She recently tackled the role of Vivian Leigh in the West Coast premiere of Orson's Shadow at the Old Globe Theater in San Diego and is currently starring in the solo tour de force Vivian, produced by Rogue Machine at Theater in Los Angeles. Please welcome Judith Chapman.
Thank you. I love that. You read that very well, Michael.
Well we're out of time.
So, okay. So much for you. I think all the details are just roguemachinetheater.com.
Yeah. Well, actually, we love Rogue Machine. We had a gentleman on the show who's a company member of Rogue Machine as well, Tucker Smallwood, who just did their killer production of Sunset Limited.
Which went on forever.
Yeah.
It was
just so
well received, just kept getting extended. So bravo, yeah. Tucker and Ron.
Yeah, no.
Sensational.
Oh, Ron, is it DiBattista?
Yeah.
Battista. Yeah. He was so good in that show, and then I saw him in an audition about 2 weeks later, and when I found out he was British, I was like, boy, you're even better than I thought, because you're sitting on top of that accent so beautifully. But now, this is also, if I remember correctly, it's a fundraiser also for
Rogue Machine. This started out as a fundraiser. Okay. I have my own company, the Troubadours of Daytime. When I came back to Daytime, The Young and the Restless, after many years of being away from, well, Daytime, not filming, but I formed a group, the Troubadours of Daytime, to utilize all this extraordinary talent. And I'm a little manic and crazy, and I'd like to produce and direct and raise money for organizations such as Kiva.org. But every year we do a fundraiser for Rogue Machine. I'm one of the original members of the company, so they let me bring my little group in. And this year I said, I'm finding my own piece, and I'm doing my own thing. And I've always had this lifelong love affair with and for Vivian Leigh.
And how did you find the piece?
I found it, I found it just a year ago. So this project's been a year in the making. And my wonderful Alina DeSantos, the co-artistic director of Rogue Machine, and I went to her, but I found it online, believe it or not.
Oh, yeah.
Wow. There was another project that I was interested in, a one-woman show on Vivian, and I just Googling, and I found this guy who lives up in Sonora, Rick Foster, who'd also written a play, and I just called him. His phone number was there, and I went, hi, I'm Judith Chapman, and I work on The Young and the Restless, and I'd love to read your play on Vivian Leigh. And he went, oh, okay. He said, send me $10, and I'll send you a copy, and the rest is history. And he was there opening night and giving me very favorable reviews.
Well, you know what,
that
reminds me of the King's Speech. You know the whole story of the King's Speech?
Yes. Yeah.
He just left the script on the doorstep of
Jeffrey Rush.
Mm-hmm. He had written the script and just, you know, so there are very...
And it was originally meant to be a play.
Yeah.
It
mm-hmm.
was a play script. And,
right.
And I think Jeffrey's mother was the one who said, you have to make a film out of
right.
this.
You're right.
And what, look how that turned
the point
out.
Being,
he deserved the award.
Good scripts
the...
find good people, however the Thank means you. Of getting
yes,
there. So,
yes. It was meant to be...
But and love the theater space on
Pinto.
It's
fantastic.
Pinto is
Rogue
a fantastic,
Machine, and what's very exciting, but Rogue Machine, we're housed in theater, but Vivian utilizes the entire stage.
Of
in
the
her
big,
main, in,
oh wow!
Because
that's
entire
a
stage,
wide well, playing area.
That's a wide playing area. Yeah. But she, at the beginning of the show, she enters a darkened theater, and then of course starts fantasizing in a dream about her life and et cetera. And but I utilize that entire space, and I'm quite a serious yoga practitioner, so it's a very physical play as well.
Oh, yeah.
And
well,
so hurling myself against walls at some point.
You know, before we talk about your beautiful play, I know that you wanted to talk a little bit about Rogue Machine and some of the shows that they have done and are doing in the near future, because you're so invested there. So.
Well, I am. I feel so passionately about this because their mission statement was to promote young playwrights mm-hmm. and only do LA premieres, only do world premieres. And now one of our shows, Henry Murray's Tree Fall has now been published. He's getting ready to do another show, Monkey Adored, but everything is multiple Ovation Award, Critics' Choice, LA Times Choice. So it's just an exciting theater that, as John Flynn says, we don't do museum pieces, but Vivian says, and God knows I'm a museum piece. But it's just an exciting, because there's so few venues, because it's so easy to do museum pieces, but to take on and tackle socially relevant topics and things that have never been done or tried and true. So it's a very gutsy place.
And a risky place.
A risky place, yes.
And we talked about this the other, I don't know if it was last week or whatever. As a theater goer, I would rather go see a play that risks and fails than go see a safe production that, you know, is quote unquote pulled off, you know, successfully. Because I'm so tired of safe theater.
We're so politically correct these days. And to tackle difficult subjects, and even Small Engine Repair that premiered at Rogue Machine, and now it's gotten such raves, it's had to move to another theater.
Yeah.
And so I encourage everybody to see that. But John Polona, one of our resident playwrights and theater company members, is just brilliant. It's brilliant. When I saw it, I went, oh, my God, the subjects you're tackling. So very encouraging.
Well, while you're talking about Rogue Machine, but before we forget, I want to make sure that people know about the tickets for Vivian. So I'm going to give that information right now. That is for reservations. You call 855-585-5185. That's 855-585-5185. Or RogueMachineTheater.com, and theater is the R-E spelling, RogueMachineTheater.com, and the show opened August 12th and is currently running through September 4th,
and we are closing September 4th because Vivian and I are going on the road.
Oh, okay.
My next stop will be in Palm Springs, California, and then to Parts Unknown, meanwhile continuing with Young and the Restless and Gloria. So my two gals, my two alter egos.
So get
and that
in
Rogue
the
is R-O-G-U-E.
Yes.
R-O-G-U-E Machine Theater. R-O-G-U-E.
And where is the theater?
It's on Pico, just west of La Brea, and can't miss it. Easy access from the 10 freeway, lots of parking, street parking.
Yeah.
And
And you actually park the cars too, don't you?
I do. I park on the side streets because I don't want to give L.A. and city any more money.
You know, I have to give Judith credit because doing a one-person show is probably the most daring and courageous and dangerous thing that an actor can do.
9 years. I did one for 9 years.
Which one?
I did a one-man show that I wrote called Straight Up with a Twist. I did 1,600 performances.
Oh, my gosh.
Well, it is exhausting.
Well, thank you for that.
Oh, no, not only exhausting, but I did Lansky.
Oh, wow.
We did a one-man show, and really one-man show, and you're out there with no net.
No net.
I mean, it is scary, to say the least, especially when you're involved with a lot of technical detail, cues, lighting cues, sound cues, projection cues, whatever you have.
And talking to all those invisible people on stage.
Yes. and you know, you're out there on your own, and it is a challenge. And it's courageous.
Well, one of our stage managers, Tom McDermott, who is also with Pacific Coast Rep Theater, I think I got that right, but our stage manager on the show, and he said, well, I want to come see your show, but should I wait a couple of weeks? And I said, honey, it's me up there by myself. Yeah. If I don't have the kinks worked out on opening night, I am in serious trouble.
Yeah. You know, it's funny, because I found, too, that, I mean, I wasn't prepared for all the physical aspects of just the prep, like, I mean, silly things, like, you have to know when to eat. You have to know exactly, you know, because your body, you know, you have to know when to eat before, you know, you have to know when to drink before. You have to tie your shoes absolutely perfectly.
You got to go to the toilet.
Yeah, you can't, all these things. It's just like you don't,
no, seriously.
Once you're out, once you're out there, you are out there. You're it. And the only way that I sort of dealt, I wrote the whole one-person show because I was dealing with stage fright. And I said, what's the most frightening thing that a person can do? One-man show. I'll stare down this dragon with this. And I found that the way I coped with the anxiety of the one-person show is I viewed the whole thing like a party I was hosting.
Excellent.
I viewed the whole thing like, this is an event that I'm hosting and everyone here is joining me. And it just sort of took that, the pressure off a little bit.
People just often ask me what my biggest fear about doing a one-person show is, and I say, the hiccups.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Think of those things.
That's true.
This is the second time I've actually done a one-woman show. I did The Belle of Amherst and played Emily Dickinson.
Oh, wow.
2 hours, even a longer show. It's a full two-act show. And talking to the invisible people, 8 people and a dog in that show.
Now, you with Jolson and also with Lansky, are those the two solo efforts that you've done? I mean, even though Jolson isn't technically
Jolson
solo.
Jolson is not really a one-man show, right. But Lansky was.
Lansky was.
Now, did you do yours with your hair?
Oh, stop. That was one of the characters.
I did it, but it was backstage on a styrofoam head. Yes.
I'm not going to let you forget this.
It would stand in for me on occasion. What were you saying?
Paul's show was about every member of his family.
Mm-hmm.
And it was beautifully done. And the cell line, which is my favorite thing.
It was straight up with a twist. The world's a cruel place when you're a straight guy with good taste and a great eye for color. That was the time. And it predated the whole metrosexual thing. That's why it was so successful, because it was written about 3 years before Queer Eye for the Straight Guy hit. And then as soon as Queer Eye for the Straight Guy became popular, I just hitched my wagon to that for about 7 years.
1,600 times you hitched your wagon.
Oh, wow.
So it went well. Yeah. Went well.
But, Judith,
but Michael, can I interrupt you? Because I think we have a call coming in, and I'd like to take it, because I think that we're with us talking to Judith, I think it may be related to that, so I'm going to answer the phone.
Sure, absolutely.
And see who's calling in. Welcome. You are on the air with State of the Arts. Who am I speaking to?
You are speaking to Tucker Smollett, and I'm calling.
Tucker!
Tucker's here! Hello, Tucker.
How are you?
Thanks for calling in.
It is my pleasure. Hello to all of you, and particularly to Dame Judith Chapman.
Oh, God bless you. God bless you.
Now, Tucker, you saw the show recently, correct?
I saw the show this Saturday night. It's the first night I've been out in 3 weeks. And I've admired Judith as an artist and a person since I met her. We're fellow members at Rogue Machine. And she was so kind to come to see work that we were doing in the middle of our own busy life. I certainly wanted to reciprocate, and I am filled with admiration. I had a glorious evening, even though I spent a goodly portion of it lying on my back. But because our main stage is so versatile, and we have an upper tier where I knew I could take sanctuary in case I started going into spasm, I did just that without drawing focus. If you love intelligent, good theater, then you really want to go see Vivian. Judith is mercurial. She's seductive, and she's flirtatious, and she's dramatic, and she's a diva.
Oh, darling, darling, continue. No, Tucker, I know what pain you were in, and God bless you, and speedy recovery with that, but Alina DeSantos, our wonderful compatriot and my director in this, but she said that you were up in the upper tier, so you could be more comfortable. So just the fact that you came out... What I was doing on stage was easy compared to what you endured to watch me.
Not at all. But when I first tuned into the show, I was afraid I was listening to revival of Hair. in any case, you've been talking about the dynamics and the challenges of solo shows. Ron Botita and I did Sunset Limited for 7 months at Rogue Machine before this. That's a two-person show without intermission, and it was the most physically challenging work that I've done in 40 years as an actor. I have such admiration for what Judith does, commanding that entire stage, moving from moments to moments in her life, talking to these famous people that you know of, having conversations with lovers and rivals and husbands and the gauntlet of emotions. And she does it beautifully and flawlessly. And so I would say she took huge risks and succeeded.
Thank you, my friend.
I happen to know that Tucker is not, that he's not making this up, and that is true, because I am a Facebook friend of Tucker's, and I read all of this 3 days ago on Facebook immediately after he saw the production, that he was just as effusive then. So thank you, Tucker, for calling in.
Absolutely, Tucker. Thank you so much.
See you soon. The stage misses you, Tucker. Speedy recovery.
I miss it, and I'm so tickled that you're going to continue performing. This is a wonderful piece for you, Judith. I'll continue to listen in now. You all be well.
Thank you, Doug.
Thank you, Tucker.
Bless.
Wow.
That was nice.
Such
a nice man.
A class act, and so generous of spirit and talent, of course, but to have your peers, and you know how this Well, you two are a little competitive with each other, too. No, I say that affectionately. But, you know, sometimes it can be difficult for people to be generous and complimentary when one's work. And so,
you know, and I found over the years that people, you know, it's the people that are really comfortable with themselves
as
a performer that never even go there. It's
Bad
always the people who are less, you know, that aren't really as good as they think they are, that are the envious and diggy ones.
It's true.
Exactly.
Don't
you think, Michael?
Yeah, absolutely. I couldn't agree more. But, you know, Judith, I want to ask you a couple questions about the content of Vivian, because our listeners certainly want to know this. I know that it hits upon many, many things from you know, Laurence Olivier, of course, and
her
that relationship.
Marriage.
Yes, and also two close friends like Katharine Hepburn and Kenneth Tynan and Winston Churchill.
Well, I don't know if I'd call Kenneth Tynan a close friend.
But the critic.
Well, that was the critic who
crucified her every chance he got. And but yes, it, you know, to incorporate all these wonderful, and but it really explores the triumph and the madness. Her triumphs, her highs of being, you know, these two Academy Awards for Gone with the Wind, which he got at 26 years old, and then several years later for Streetcar Named Desire, this gut-wrenching performance that she had done on stage as well. And but her 20-year marriage, and but the demise of that marriage, and the and talking about the show business competitiveness between them. As I'm a huge fan of Laurence Olivier, God bless him, he is one of the greats and will always be. But the fact that they did all these plays on stage, Caesar and Cleopatra, Romeo and Juliet, Macbeth, everything, Othello. Oh. But he never put her in one of his Shakespeare films. Oh. I mean, what a sense of betrayal, and what a sense of, why not me?
Well,
why not?
Mm-hmm.
And choosing other actresses over her because of his ego, his worry that she was too bigger than he was.
Yeah.
But so it's it covers everything, and then her manic depression as we know it today, bipolar as we know it today.
Right.
But there was no cure. I mean, her swings and her mood and the violence that came along with it, and she would be treated by having electric shock treatments. And then be able still to go on stage at night. Ultimately it was tuberculosis that killed her, that done her in at the ripe age of 53. But the amount of living that she did and the extremes in which she lived.
But not only wasn't... Oh, I'm sorry, forgive me.
No.
But not only did she have those things, you know, those ailments that you mentioned, but, I mean, forget dealing with them. You couldn't even discuss them at that time.
Oh, absolutely not.
You know, you couldn't even discuss, because, you know, at that time, madness was madness. There was no... I mean, now it would... I mean,
now we just take a pill.
Just take a pill, yeah.
I'm not saying that lightly.
No, but, it's just... It's so...
But one of her great fears, and in her manic phase, she said, do not put me in a hospital. Do not put me in an institution. So she preferred to go have a little brush up electric shock therapy rather than be institutionalized.
Brain tox, exactly.
But she would say, yes, I powdered the burn marks at my temples before going off. But she did a wicked sense of humor. So there's a great deal of humor and pathos, but yes, there is a major violent breakdown on stage every performance.
So it
covers everything.
At the end of doing an evening, based on what you've just explained, you must be totally spent, exhausted, or are you totally lifted?
Both. Everyone asks me, aren't you exhausted? How do you do that? And it's just because the stage manager, very sweet, Victoria, was just wonderful running through the show. Before we opened, she said, now, do you need anything, you know, during the course of the show or before? I said, Vivian would like a small glass of wine when she comes off stage. So I get, you know, I say that great effect. So every day when I come off stage, there's a little glass of wine. So, which is wonderful. It is exhausting, but I sleep very well.
Mm-hmm.
But it's such a thrill and such a joy to do this show. Whatever emotional ringer I put myself through, it's such a thrill and such an honor. And Vivian continues to be such an inspiration for me because of what she endured and what she, you know, stood up and said, okay, carry on.
And Judith, just in regard to being the one, like you said, about being tired and sleeping very well, and I don't know, Mike, if you'll experience this yourself, but especially in regard to the one-person show. But I found that even if I was tired before I did it, 2 minutes into the show, you're not tired anymore.
Absolutely.
You suck that energy out of the audience that's coming back at you, and you rechannel it. And because you can't, I mean, the first thing is you can't be tired. You're not allowed to be tired. As a performer, you have to deliver. And have you found that, that just, I mean, because we all have different hard days and all that. Have you found that we just get out there and just sort of rechannel and fuel?
The well is bottomless. I mean, we just keep being able to draw on those reserves. But yes, there's nothing like lights, camera, action, or the lights going up and knowing there's an audience murmuring out there, and all of a sudden they're quiet and they're listening and waiting and being there with you, for you.
Yeah.
That gives you a lot of energy.
Yeah.
Well, not only that, but, you know, sickness. I mean, I've gone on, when I was a kid, I started when I was 7 years old with my parents, and in those days, there were no understudies, and you didn't cancel a performance, even if you were sick. And I've had experiences where I really felt ill for one other reason, physically, or I was tired, and the minute you go on stage, it disappears.
Yeah.
It's just something that happens. It's the magic of going on to where you belong. It's my home, really. Right, it's not a stage. To me, it's my home when I go on stage.
It's a plane and above the physical.
It's an, an adrenaline kind of rush that happens when you go on. And I've gone on with a bad back, and I've come off, and it's gone.
Yeah.
It's magic.
I love what you said, Mike, though, that it is our home. It is where we live.
That's where
Vivian said, it's the theater. It's the only place I've ever really felt secure.
That's what happens. And, you know, it's hard to explain to young performers that come up and ask, should I, you know, or kids, my opinion, should they want to go into show business? And the only thing I tell them is, if you can live without it, please do something else.
Yeah. I can't believe you just said that. Well, I went to Stevens College, and Gene Muir, who was around in the 30s and in the original Midsummer Night's Dream with Mickey Rooney, but she was one of my teachers, and that's what she always told us. What's the best thing you can tell us, Ms. Muir? If you can live without it, do.
Do something else.
Do
only
something
if you
else.
Cannot live it, without
exactly.
this,
mm-hmm.
go and do it. Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah. I think that's going to be our sound bite for our show when we advertise the show. It's a great line.
Yes, it is.
You
it's
can
a great
live
line.
Without it,
yeah.
Yeah.
And obviously, none of us can. So.
Well, it certainly
it
is.
Sure beats mine, which was just try to get the insurance. That was my. That's what I used to say.
To build up the weeks. Yeah. You need 12 weeks today for that.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, to see Judith Chapman in Vivian, we're going to give you this information one more time. It is at Theater, which is located at 5041 West Pico Boulevard in Los Angeles. That is two blocks west of La Brea for those of you who live in town. Vivian will be on stage now through September 4th, and that will be Fridays, Saturdays at 8 p.m. and 2 p.m. on Sundays. Exceptions are Saturday, August 27th at 5 p.m., Sunday, August 28th at 3 p.m., and an added show on Monday, August 29th at 8 p.m.
And Michael, if I may interrupt, just because this weekend, the huge YNR fan event
absolutely.
Is Friday night, so I won't be doing, because fans will be coming from across the country, but not only across America, but from Europe. So I was just at the Monte Carlo Television Festival and was interviewed on radio, television, newspapers, everything. And everybody wanted to know about Vivian, and so many of the fans. We've been selling tickets from Italy,
in
Belgium.
Fantastic.
And so fans are coming over for the YNR event and then coming to Vivian this weekend.
Nice.
So
that's Young and Restless for our listeners that don't often hear the term.
Young and Restless.
You know the terminology, but some of them may not. But
So in conclusion, Paul, for reservations, ladies and gentlemen, for tickets, you call 855-585-5185. Once again, 855-585-5185, or visit Rogue Machine Theater, that's spelled with an R-E, theater.com, and you will get your tickets.
Yes.
And Judith, please stick around for the rest of the hour. We're going
to
take, before we talk to Mike, we're going to take a little bit of a break, and we're going to pay the bills. Michael, would you kick off our arts calendar for us?
I will do that. Thank you, Paul. And we are going to be talking with, well, I'm sorry, we're going to be talking to Mike in a minute, but Paul, this is interesting copy that you've written here today for me to read.
Yes.
So, ladies and gentlemen, we want you to meet the Wentworths. Mary, a suburban working mother who likes her husband but hates his hands. Loves her kids but recognizes that her parenting skills are amiss and doesn't have a word for how she's been feeling lately. Henry, a straight-laced workaholic type who insists that a book club could breathe some new life into his wife's routine. John, a 15-year-old who is best known for his delinquent antics at school, and Jody, the self-described perfect child.
And meet the Flynn family. Carol, a wine-guzzling trophy wife on a permanent vacation. Scott, a simple, dry-humored role with a punches type. Samantha, Scott's daughter from his first marriage, a 22-year-old at Smith College who is as comfortable with herself as the adults ought to be. Dysnomia chronicles the chaos that ensues when Mary Wentworth finally finds the word that describes how she's been feeling. It isn't bored, it isn't lonely, it isn't apathetic. It's gay. The word is gay. Don't miss this Ovation-recommended production of Dysnomia, extended through September 10th at the Lounge Theater in Hollywood. We found out about this from Monroe Mikowski, who's an old friend of mine, who is in this production, and we will have him on next week about this fascinating play.
At a wonderful theater, actually. The Lounge Theater is a terrific space. If you haven't been there, folks, before, go and see this. It sounds fascinating just by reading about it. And for more information about events in today's arts calendar, you can visit us either at stateoftheartsla.com or performingartslive.com, where you can also check out what's happening in Southern California every day of the week.
And before we get to Mike, you saw a production this week, did you?
I did indeed. And I'm going to talk about it briefly because we have so many more things to talk about with Mike and with Judith, but Beau Geste, the James Sherman play, Beau Geste, that ran off-Broadway for nearly 3 years, has made its Los Angeles revival here at the Glendale Center Theater in a truly wonderful, uplifting evening of theater. You know, it's nice to go and see. We were talking about it at the beginning of the show. This show happens to work for the reason that it's very well written, and the comedic timing of this particular cast, which includes Allison Robertson, Mario Di Gregorio, Elaine Rose, Danny Michaels, Sean Cahill, and Kelly Flynn. They are such troopers. I mean, they're such well-tuned, fine-oiled actors, if you will, with a sense of comedy and knowing how to pull off these you know, lines of
rapid
comedy.
Fire,
yes, rapid fire, boom, boom, boom. Similar to the play that you're getting ready to do, Kvetch.
Yeah.
Beautiful evening. The audience was in heaven, and I urge people to go out and see a production of this. This is on stage at Glendale Center Theater, one of the Southern California's great theaters in the round. 400 seats, wow. Beautiful, beautiful space, and it is on stage now through September 24th. And the nice thing about this theater is the accessibility it is, as a patron who enjoys going to theater but often cannot afford the price of theater.
Yeah.
And this company, which does 8 shows a year, 3 major musicals, 4 plays, and then an annual production of Dickens' A Christmas Carol, their top ticket price is $26.
And Glendale Center Theater has not been dark in 65 years. They're the longest
coming up on 65.
65 years, yeah. It's a great space.
So it was a pleasure to be there.
And a very funny play, Beau Geste.
Yes, it is. So thanks for asking about that, Paul.
Not at all, not at all.
Now, wait a minute. An Italian is going to do a play called Kvetch?
Yes.
Stranger things have happened. Yes.
I don't play a Jewish character in the play.
Oh, okay.
There are Jewish characters in the play. I don't.
But
play.
You're not the Kvetch.
I'm not the Kvetch.
Okay.
No.
No, that's okay.
See, I'm trying to give him his intro, and he's mocking me. This guy.
I know. Now, well, before you do that, it's been a long time since I always wanted to speak to Vivian Leigh, and she's I've adored her. But there's always been a rumor, and maybe Vivian can enlighten me on this. Years ago, I was very fortunate to work with Danny Kaye in 1967. She knows what's coming.
As do I.
Yes. In 1967, it was right after the Six-Day War in Israel, and he came to entertain the troops. And I was a young soldier, and I was asked to accompany him. And we spent about a month together. And there's been a rumor for so many years about between Danny and Olivia. Sir Lawrence.
Sir Lawrence.
And
Maddie boy.
If anybody would know, it would be you, Vivian, right?
This is broached in the play.
It
and
is.
Danny Kaye is mentioned by name. So I said, this play has everything. It's the ultimate reality show. You've got it.
But you've got to see the play to find out.
Maybe we shouldn't.
Must see the play to find out. But it is touched on. In fact, one of Vivian's great lines, which I'm not going to share.
No, let's
right
not
now,
give
that
it away.
Maybe off camera. Off mic. But it's interesting that a few years ago, Joan Plowright, Larry Boyd, left Vivian because of her illness, because of so many different things, for Joan Plowright, a much younger, more stable woman. Boring, but stable. But apparently Joan Plowright did an interview, and she said, when one is touched with greatness, one excuses much.
Aha.
So with that, I'll leave it at that. So I'll, you know.
Touched with greatness.
One excuse.
You're not speaking in euphemisms there, are you?
No, now you can introduce me after that line.
Speaking of touched with greatness.
Thank you. Thank you for that lovely lead-in.
Born in New York.
Judith.
Born in New York to a famed family of Yiddish language actors. Our next guest first walked on stage at the age of 3. He's enjoyed a unique international career entertaining audiences on stage, screen, and television in nightclubs and on concert stages throughout the world. He co-wrote and created his critically acclaimed new musical, Jolson at the Winter Garden, which will have its Los Angeles premiere at the El Portal Theater in North Hollywood on September 8th. Please welcome Mike Burstyn. How the heck are you? You
nice
touched
to have
with greatness
you.
Person.
Yeah.
How do you fit all these people in here?
Like, it ain't easy, Mike.
Like 300 audience members in this little room. Thank you. Thank you so much,
Michael,
for that
Michael trains them very well.
We take them with us everywhere.
Wherever
we go,
you
so,
go.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, thank you for that introduction.
Absolutely. Thank
Good
you for being
you.
Here.
So, good to have you.
It's my pleasure.
And how exciting. Yeah.
Playing Jolie, huh?
Yeah. Actually, I think I'm channeling Joe.
Really?
Yeah, it's really strange what happens, you know, once this show started. I did a musical 12 years ago that was originally done in London, Jolson the Musical.
Mm-hmm.
And we did the United States tour. We toured for 13 months with it. And it was amazing what happened when I started. I've been a Jolson fan since I was a kid. I knew all his records and all his songs. And it was a dream, you know, I never thought I'd get to portray Al Jolson. But we come, you know, we come from the same kind of roots because Jolson was an entertainer. And I come from that same background. We don't have entertainers anymore.
Mm.
You know, it's something that our generation is kind of losing. The entertainer, the performer that could go on stage and do everything,
yeah. Right.
Now we have specialists, you know, they're either stand-up comics or singers or actors, but those entertainers, you know, that tradition is gone, and it's something that I grew up on. You know, I grew up in the Yiddish theater on Second Avenue in New York. It was the Jewish Rialto, the Jewish Broadway. My parents were great stars, and I grew up with legends like Molly Picon and Maury Schwartz, and these are legends. And that was my schooling. My training was doing it,
right.
You know, not going to school and learning it. And so when I got this opportunity and I auditioned for the musical 12 years ago, I happened to be in Los Angeles, and I passed by on the 405, if you pass by Hillside Cemetery,
mm-hmm.
You will see a huge monument and a waterfall. It's a cupola, and that's Al Jolson's. That is his grave.
Oh wow!
It's a beautiful thing. If you ever drive by, you'll see it. And so I stopped by. I went up there, and I visited his grave. There's also a statue of him doing Mammy on his knee, and I said a little prayer, and I said, Mr. Jolson, if you will allow me to get this part, I promise I will. I will do you justice.
Went right to the source.
And I got the part.
Oh, that's wonderful.
So we toured for 13 months, and the greatest compliment was that there were some old-timers that used to come up to our sound engineer after the show and ask which Jolson recordings I was mouthing to.
Excellent.
And
the
sound engineer said, no, that was Mike singing. He said, don't tell me I saw Jolie perform, and that was Al Jolson singing. No greater compliment no. I could get.
We'd love to hear a little bit of your singing, Paul.
Yes, and then I'm glad you mentioned that, because actually we have this file of you in performance. But this is not from,
this is from the current show.
The current production.
I believe that's from the...
Is this from the one you're discussing?
The one we discussed 12 years ago,
well,
yeah.
Well, either way, I'm sure it'll... Let's play it and find out.
From you a long time. I never thought I'd miss you so. Somehow I feel your love is real. Near you, I wanna be. The birds are singing, it is song time. The banjo strumming soft and low. I know that you yearn for me too. Swanee, you're calling me. Swanee, how I love you, how I love you, my dear.
Bobby Free, Bobby Down. Fly the Spotty.
Oh, that was awesome. Oh,
my goodness.
Yeah, that
we're doing the applause button.
Oh, absolutely.
That's great.
But, you know, I'm not doing a Jolson imitation.
No.
You know?
No.
We are trying, you know, it's what we're doing is in this show, we're really recreating a Jolson concert that he used to do. He used to do Sunday night specials at the Winter Garden when all the theaters were dark. So he could show off for all his colleagues. Right. He used to invite all his other, you know, competitors to come and see him and the audiences, and he would go on stage and sing for hours. I mean, he loved to perform. And so we're recreating a Jolson Sunday night special, and I'm trying to bring him to life. It's not an imitation.
Well, no, and an imitation does not sustain a full evening.
No,
that's a very important thing.
Absolutely.
The important thing is to honor him, and that's the thing. To do, you know, an impersonation will last about 5 or 10 minutes. It's like, boy, that's really accurate.
Yeah.
Then you have an whole evening that you have to present people with. So I love to hear that it's not
an impersonation. It's not, no, and it's not an impersonation, but we do get the gist and the feeling, the audience, of what it may have been like, hopefully, to attend an evening with Al Jolson. And the music is incredible. I mean, I get to sing almost 24 of the greatest songs written in the past century by everybody from George Gershwin to Irving Berlin, et cetera, et cetera. So it's such a joy.
You're touching his soul.
Oh, my God.
It was Vivian. It's about her soul. I mean, I can get up there and do a little impersonation, wear a black wig. But then that's not touching the soul of the person we're playing.
Absolutely.
Channeling.
I really feel like I'm channeling, because once it starts, I don't have to think about it anymore.
Right.
I really don't. At the beginning, I did. But once we started, it's just I go out there and I become somebody else. And that's the great joy of our business.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You can forget your troubles for a while and go out there and enjoy
yourself.
Come
on, get happy.
And it's fun, you know. I've been so many years that I've been doing this. I don't want to do anything anymore where I don't have fun, you know.
Oh, God, no.
If I can't enjoy it and really go out and look forward to going there and spending an hour and a half and having fun and harmony with all our coworkers, then I'd rather not do it. And this show is so much joy and fun to do.
And that's the show I want to see. I don't want to go see a show and see someone working. I want to see a show where they're having as much fun as I, as the audience member, am having, because that's palatable.
Absolutely.
You know?
Well,
you know,
it radiates.
Yeah.
It radiates right across the footlights.
Very much so.
They can feel, an audience can feel if there is work going on. And
sure.
If you can, you know, if you can enjoy yourself, and it happens in the first minute.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't get them in the first minute and a half, it's an uphill battle. And so right from the start in this show, I think audiences just have fun.
Well, don't you think we all just need a break from all the work outside in this real world and the news and the mayhem and everything, to be able to go to and watch you as Jolson
and enjoy something collectively,
because we've
become a people now that sit in front of screens or in front of computers, and we don't get to enjoy things as an audience.
Right.
Together, you know, it used to be follow the bouncing ball. When people came to a movie, the first thing they did was a sing-along. And it's a joy to enjoy something with other people.
Right.
And not just be, you know, isolated.
I'm sorry to interrupt you, Paul.
Please.
You're striking a nerve with me that really, I talk about it often on this show, which is, you know, technology, which you've just cited, and we are guilty of that, sitting in front of our screens, and the worst most offensive thing is our cell phones, and the younger generation's use of them. And I was at dinner the other night, and the first 15 minutes of two people sitting at the table across from me, and they ordered silently. They kind of pointed at what they wanted, never spoke with the waitress, and they were both on their own phones during that whole time for 15 minutes without saying a word to one another.
Yeah.
And then the food came, and then they put the phones down, and they had dinner. That's so
our communication skills are
kind of ironic that technology that is supposed to help us connect with other people is actually what's
isolated
creating
it.
The bubble.
Mm-hmm.
That,
exactly.
And, you know, we always talk about young people and trying to get young people into the theater because it's essential to get young people into the theater. And to echo what Mike was saying, what I've always pushed for is the whole idea, which you really is a difficult idea to get across to someone who doesn't go to theater frequently, is what happens in that room will never be replicated again.
Exactly.
That will only happen that night. You're not watching a YouTube video for the 90th time. You're not watching your DVD of The Office that is all, you know, packaged and finished. There is an energy and there is a dynamic there that is only shared by the people in that room. And I think that is what, we can just get that across to people, that you have to actually get up and get in your car and go to that location to experience it. And once they do experience it, I think that we'll have
it. It's magic. It's called magic.
Yeah. It's called magic.
It's magic that happens, you know, showtime.
Yeah.
And one of the highlights of the show is when the audience get towards the end of the show, I actually go into the audience as Jolie used to do, and he'd say to the boys, let's bring up the house lights, kid. You know, I want to see these happy, smiling faces. And they say, we have a sing-along of Nothing Could Be Finer Than to Be in Carolina in the Morning. You have no idea. You see all these stoic, you know, faces sitting there, and all of a sudden, they're all singing. The whole audience is singing. And, you know, you can't replicate that.
They're singing, and they're holding their cell phones, and they're waving them back and forth.
Exactly.
Michael, would you give the stats on this so people know where to go for tickets?
I will,
for this?
Indeed. Mike Burstyn in Jolson at the Winter Garden at the beautiful El Portal Theater, 5269 Lancashire Boulevard in North Hollywood, from September 6th through the...
Extended,
Yes, original date was 18th, but now it's through the 25th.
Right.
Of September, and that's Tuesdays through Saturdays at 8 p.m. In addition, matinee performances will be given at 2 p.m. on Wednesdays, Saturdays, and Sundays. And the official opening night, once again, is Thursday, September 8th. And tickets and further information may be obtained by calling the box office at 877-733-7529. Once again, 877-733-7529, or by online at the El Portal Theater. Once again, theater is spelled with an R-E at the end, and that is elportaltheater.com.
Actually, that number is even easier to remember. It's 877-C-PLAY.
Yes,
S-E-E-P-L-A-Y.
You're right.
877-C-PLAY.
Right.
Yeah. Go to the El Portal. Stop at Pitfire beforehand. Get the Pitfire pizza right at the corner of Lancashire and Magnolia. Killer pizza. You ever been there?
Yes.
We are endorsing it personally.
We're endorsing it personally.
We like that.
Okay, we got...
You know what Paul? Greatness sitting here in the studio.
Yes.
Well, y'all have been fabulous.
Thank you. Y'all obviously
love what you do live every day, and it is such a pleasure. And Paul, thank you, because people do not understand. There are no do-overs. You don't get to go off stage and go, can I try that one more time?
Yeah.
No. What do they call it in golf?
Mulligan
or something.
Yeah, you get to experience a one-in-a-lifetime event.
Yeah.
Yes, it will never be duplicated.
Yeah. Although, you know, one of the things that we try in our business, and that's always driven me crazy, is consistency. Once we freeze the show, I can assure everybody that the show they'll see opening night will be the same show they'll see on closing night. We try to do the same show, but it is live and things happen, and it's not you're not watching a cable television show.
But a great chef prepares a great meal and strives for consistency.
Yes.
But if you go and you have that meal four or five times, it'll be consistent, but you'll love it for different reasons every
time
you go.
Exactly. We owned restaurants in my other half, James, in Palm Springs, and higher-end restaurants, and people say, well, it was a little different. I said, you want consistency, go to that Mac place.
Yeah, exactly. Go to the Scottish restaurant.
Yes, go to the Scottish restaurant, exactly. And I said the same thing, then watch the movie. But if you want to go into the danger of live theater.
Yeah. We have only about 3 minutes, actually 2.5 minutes left in our hour, but we want to ask you both if you have a little anecdote you can share about your worst or most embarrassing onstage mishap or performance mishap. Mike, do you have a quick one for us?
Very quickly. Actually, Jolie tells it that he once performed for one person in the audience. It was a blizzard in Omaha, Nebraska. And the cast said, we can't perform for one guy. Give him his money back and we'll go home. And Jolie said, the show must go on. If he came to see us in a blizzard, we're going to give him the best show he's ever seen. He went out in front of the curtain. He said, sir, if you came to see us in this blizzard, you're going to see the best show you've ever seen. Don't worry. The man got up and he said, Mr. Jolson, don't work so hard. I'm just the usher here.
God. Well, I can't top that. I've just gone completely blank because I've chosen to go blank about all my mishaps.
Oh, okay. That's fine.
But hopefully I'll be around long enough to have a few.
She's never had a mishap.
I've never had
one.
Well, it's a pleasure as always.
Absolutely.
Michael.
Absolutely. Thank you, Paul. And thank
and
you again,
Judith,
Mike.
What a joy having you in.
Thank
really,
you.
Really appreciate
good
it.
100%.
Success,
Mike Burstyn.
Thank you,
can't
my
wait
dear.
To see your show.
And I'll see yours.
Yes, and
we'll
can find out about Larry Boy.
Oh, yes.
Yes, to find out the sordid truth about Danny Kaye and Laurence Olivier, you have to go to Rogue Machine
Theater. RogueMachineTheater.com.
And thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for joining us on State of the Arts.
You're listening to State of the Arts with Michael Sterling and Paul Strolley right here on LA Talk Radio.